Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here for the unpleasant task of talking about this game against the Raiders and the defense in particular tonight. Joining me to do that is Jordan Coe. Jordan, how are you doing?
Pretty good, Ken. All things considered, pretty good.
Right. Not an ideal situation. The Ravens lose a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter. It's not like we haven't heard this song before. Number of different places to point the finger. The offense in the fourth quarter had a couple three and outs that were not good. The officials certainly played their part in this. The secondary did not have a good fourth quarter. They actually, you know, as a whole, I don't think they played particularly bad. And then there's always going to be people, no matter if it's coordinator's fault or whoever, that want to blame John Harbaugh right off the bat. It's the first point of refuge is, okay, that's John Harbaugh. We're never going to win. We're never, ever going to win until we get rid of John Harbaugh.
Well, also, you leave the special teams off this list. Huge part of the problem, both in the fourth quarter and for the balance of the game. Just has not been historically what we expect from Ravens football. Justin Tucker is 1 for 7 for his last 7 kicks from over 50. I mean, like, and not bad misses too. Like, that's what's really bizarre about it. It's not like he's really in his head. It's just like he's slightly off. And both this kick and the miss in the Kansas City game were really within what looked like 2.5 feet or less, maybe. And so it's just, you know, it's bizarre.
I mean, I do have a question because his productivity has dropped off the last 2 years prior to this year. He's about 8 points above the league average. I think he was only 3.5 last year. This year, who knows? I mean, he could be in negative territory all of a sudden. He also is 35. And so the question is, you've got to ask the question, is it Jordan Stout now, who's been here for exactly this three-year overlap where Tucker's had his least productive seasons, or is it Tucker's age that's also, part of the issue here? And I think you could go with either, but I think it's very hard to understate the importance of having a Hall of Fame holder in there to do that job.
I've never given that any meaningful consideration until right this moment. But, man, Jordan Stout has been frustrating. This is not a podcast about special teams, and I know you don't have one, so maybe this is the spot to do it. But my former co-host Gabe Ferguson, he and I watch the games together. We talk a lot of football together. He's always been frustrated with Jordan Stout. And if you layered in, and if you think about it, holds could be the difference between being up some of the margins of these kicks. Again, it's not like Tucker is badly missing these kicks, right? Like, it's not like he's coming up way short. It's not like some of the things that you would think are the standout things that kickers would miss on. Those aren't what are happening here, which make you struggle to be like, oh, well, he's just getting old, right? Like, if all the kicks were just coming up short, if we were getting maxed over and the back end of his career, like, he couldn't hit kicks over 50 yards because he couldn't kick it that far anymore. Mm-hmm. Or felt like it. That's not what this feels like. And man, that's ammunition for the folks that want to be critical of Jordan Stout.
He made a kick during practice for 67 or 68 yards. I watched the officials call it no good. They called it short. One official convinced the other that it was short, and then they both kind of waved their hand off. But, you know, the video evidence seems to indicate that it was good.
Off a tee, I assume, too, right?
No, not off a tee.
Okay.
This is a regular practice kick. Now, nobody's trying to block it, but they were basically trying to, you know, kick that from that distance. And it was towards the building, you know, in that for what that means. And impressive certainly that he kicked that. So I don't think it's a leg strength issue. And I would guess, you know, this may be a question for Friday morning GM that I'd bring up, but if you had to use a I think I'll bring it up there. If you had to use an extra roster spot to carry Sam Cook on the roster again, and that point may have passed now. It may not be possible to do it. And his job was only to be a holder. Okay. I don't think there's a doubt in my mind that it might be worth it, given how you really have less burden to bear on the kickoff. You don't really need those players. I mean, other teams are proving that they can kick the ball in the end zone every time. The Ravens have tried to pooch it. You know, they've had a couple. They put four in the end zone this time intentionally, but basically they've tried to play the game and carried extra special teams players and had extra injury risk because of it. And if you could cut one of those players that you need him for kickoffs, but you don't need him for punts, for example, then I think it all of a sudden makes a lot of sense that you could carry a second player just to hold.
And do you need Jordan Stout? I mean, if you got a guy that can't consistently kick it 40 yards in the air, and Sam Cook will come back and he'll give you 40, like, it's going to be directional, it's going to be accurate. Maybe it's not going to be the boomers that you saw from Stout in college. I mean, even aside from roster spot, will you be willing to sacrifice cap space for that trade-off? Because I you can't say that Jordan Stout lost this game with that kick, but it certainly put the Ravens well behind what they needed to do. And it allowed the Raiders to run the ball twice at the end of that possession in a way that if everything else happened the same way and it was a 45-yard kick instead of a 20-yard kick, then, or a 19-yard kick is what it ended up being, right? They have to throw the ball there twice, right? And predictably so. When you're in that situation, it's very hard to say that didn't fundamentally affect the outcome of this game. I'm hard-pressed to say that Tucker missing the kick in the Kansas City game didn't affect the outcome of that game. And so if you assume that Jordan Stout is a part of any of those, and I'm not saying that I think he is. It's like I said, I haven't even given this any consideration. But yike. And there are plenty of decent punters. And like, if you're going out there and finding a good holder, it doesn't have to be Sam Cook. Like, give me anybody, right? Because this is Lamar in his prime.
No, I'm not doing that. If I'm making the change, I think, first of all, let me just say this about Stout. Stout has absolutely been booming the ball all summer. So I'm not looking to replace Stout the punter.
He boomed the ball in college. He boomed the call. His history is being able to boom the ball, right? So like, there's a little Kyle Baller factor here. Like, he can get down on one knee and throw the ball through the uprights, but if he can't punt in games, who gives a crap?
Well, I don't disagree with that. He hasn't been like at the bottom of the league in terms of what he's provided the Ravens as a punter. In fact, he's been above average. But the problem has been is that Tucker's value as a kicker has been reduced since he's arrived, and we're trying to diagnose whose problem that is. I don't think it's the long snapper, because they've had two different long snappers. Actually, they've had three different long snappers. They've had Moore in the 3 years that it's been. So they've really had a change at long snapper every year. I don't think that's it. I think the problem, if you had to spot it, was probably at holder. And
I'm also curious what EPA numbers might look like on some of those punts, right? Because this whole idea of like net yardage isn't hurting the team, fine, right? But you can't have a guy that's going to kick the ball 24 yards when you need to kick the ball 60, right?
Yeah, so you want expected win probability, I think, is what you want on the
sorry,
punts. Yeah, that's expected
points added. Expected points added is fine. Like, I think both of those are rooted the same.
They're very different in the second half of a football game. I'll just say that without going into this. It's a 10-minute or 15-minute discussion. Yeah.
Anyway, expected wins, expected points, whatever your fancy is, this idea that if whatever probability number or win number you're looking at was altered significantly by the Jordan Stout punt, you got to assume that there was a pretty hefty percentage swing when that went 19 yards instead of going 40 yards.
Yeah, it easily could have changed their chance to win that game by 10% and maybe more. It very well could have been more. But anyway.
And that's probably the biggest negative outcome that you could have for a punter for their career.
you get a kick blocked. Yeah. You get a kick return for a touchdown. You're not blaming it on the punter. You're blaming it on the return squad as well. Holman penalty was bad as well. I don't want to go into all this, but there were so many really bad plays in this game. And Harbaugh, you know, in some ways he kind of took the high road today, in some ways the low road in how he talked to the at the podium today, but he talked about, you know, you can blame the officials for certain penalties. And he called out the big ones that everybody thinks were lousy calls. And then he says, but what are you gonna do about the false start? And Derrick Henry's two false starts were incredibly costly. Two of them.
And I don't think I can't remember a running back for the Ravens committing two false start penalties in one game. I mean, it's just, yeah.
It'd be unusual. It does happen, but I mean, one does happen, but you're right. I can't remember it either. And he was there to be a pusher on the play. So it was a tush push kind of a opportunity. They had it lined up the way they wanted it. Of course, the Raiders were also lined up to try and stop it as well, but it would have been a good opportunity, and that would have helped the Ravens come a lot closer to putting away that game if they'd gotten that first down for sure. So frustrating indeed. I want to get back to talking about the defense though a little bit, and you know, obviously we can talk about all those things. I think if you're going to blame coaching, by the way, maybe we just start with this as far as the defense goes. I think the blame has to go to Orr and not Harbaugh. If you're going to hire a defense, I mean, you can say it was a lousy hire by Harbaugh to hire Orr, if you want to say that. But I think that you know, Orr is now, they had two players that were absolutely killing them, Bowers and Adams. Okay. And they were basically the entire offense for the Las Vegas Raiders in this game. And they could not find an in-game solution to limit them. And maybe they don't have the base scheme that works with it. Maybe, you know, just a robber concept is too complicated a thing to bring into the game at a specific time that would have disrupted the kind of the rhythm that Minshew was in. But it was something, you know, they need, for the second straight week, they needed something to disrupt the plan. The first week against Kansas City, it was disrupting the success that Kansas City had with the bunch formation and, you know, getting off with picks and rubs and being able to do things. And there are things that could be done to change that. Coach Derek from All 22 Films was on. He said they should have dropped an outside linebacker and, you know, jammed at the point, and that would have given them an opportunity to disrupt the timing of those routes. Yeah, it would have hurt the pass rush, but the guy can still rush afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, lots of, you know, this feels like it feels like early in the season last year under McDonald. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we don't want to overstate it. It feels a little bit like it was the 2 years before that at times, where there were just specific spots on the field where it felt like the Ravens were exceptionally vulnerable. And so you want to be able to make adjustments in that regard and be able to do it. You know, part of you wants to blame the fact that Wiggins didn't play, but they knew he wasn't going to play all week, right? You knew Devontae Adams was a guy that was going to be in here. You knew Bowers, based on the first week of game tape, was going to be a big part of what they were doing in the game. Yeah. So it's not even just a matter of saying they didn't adjust well. It's almost like saying they didn't even come in with as exceptional of a plan as you might want. And I think that frustrates me more than maybe there is nuance that could be happening that even we all don't see about what they're doing on defense and it doesn't work. But it felt like they weren't ultimately quite prepared for what they needed to do.
Well, you just made a great point earlier at the beginning of that. It basically said, felt like McDonald, you know, last year. McDonald 2 years ago in his second game, and this was Orr's second game, of course, had the, you know, the self-destruction against the Dolphins in the fourth quarter. It was a hell of a lot worse comeback allowed than what Zach did this time. I'm not giving up on Zach Orr. So I think there's still hope that he can do this. He came up through the same basic system. He did not have the 1 year internship at Michigan that would have been, you know, a nice thing to have, is a little bit of play calling experience from that perspective. But he also, he worked with McDonald. It's the same scheme. It's effectively a very similar thing. And there hasn't been anything, by the way, so far that has been so drastically different that I'd say, you know, or threw the baby out with the bathwater and said, I'm changing everything. I don't like what McDonald had. I think he basically is staying with the same kind of too high look, the bringing Hamilton down to be the free safety. He's got, slot corner rather, having more options on the outside than McDonald had. He still has a pretty good pass rush. McDonald did a little bit more in terms of different things to de-vanillaize the pass rush. We'll talk a little bit about that. But I'm not seeing this is not like a difference between Pease and Martindale in terms of, you know, philosophy is completely different.
I don't I agree with the latter part of what you just said, which is that the difference from Pease to Martindale was not like apples and oranges, yeah. Right? Night and day, right? We don't have that here. I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on the Ravens' varying coverage and what it looks like to quarterbacks right now. The Ravens have been very, from my perspective, vanilla post-snap around what you're going to get. What you see is almost what you're going to get on every one of these bites so far, from my perspective. I think that's how the Raiders ultimately took advantage of the Ravens. When they were in that deep cover three look and they knew they had those deep like crossers, those were available, and they were getting 4 or 5 yards behind Roquan and Simpson, and they were able to light those up. And the Ravens did nothing to then make it look like they were going to give you that cover three look and not give you that cover three look. And ultimately, that was the thing that I think really distinguished McDonald. Everybody wanted to give a lot of that credit to what he did with the pass rush, and some of that you had to do hand in hand because you had to uniquely create what you were doing the pass rush to make it different in terms of what you were doing on the back end. I still think you can mix some of that up more than the Ravens have so far this season. I'm not ready to say that they're not going to do that down the road here, though. You know, this is still early. They're still trying to get their balance of what they want to do with these kind of things. Like you said, the Dolphins game was much more of a disaster than the Raiders game a few years ago in terms of what we were looking at. And that team was still ultimately by the end of the year, very competitive, you know, if it wasn't for Lamar going down. So, you know, there's a lot to point to in these plays and games and individually and be upset about it. But there's also plenty to say, we just have to wait and see. And this sucked. We didn't love it, but you know, you live and you learn, and sometimes you got to take some lumps to find out whether you got it or you don't. And I'd rather take them in week two when you got time to catch up than week 16 when a game really matters.
Yeah. Okay. Agree with pretty much everything you said. The weakness of the Ravens right now is really showing out to be the L2, L3 area in the middle of the field. It's behind the linebackers and in front of the safeties. And unfortunately, some of that's on the linebackers, but some of it's on the safeties. I don't think the safety play from Eddie Jackson has been particularly good. He's not lit it up. And I don't think Marcus Williams has played all that well so far. So hopefully he's a guy who will come on, will have some better things to do. I think some of it is, you know, giving a guy like Jackson has a lot of experience as a ball hawk, the ability to come down and come after the football in some ways. So you have your matchup zones. You decide whether you really want to go with one of those safeties high or two. And then you mix that up some and you decide how you're going to play it. But I think at the heart of this is using a safety to take away routes in between L2 and L3 on a somewhat regular basis. So the opponent can't pick it up necessarily, but robber concepts, you would hear them called, but something that takes away a route. And if you take that away, all of a sudden timing on the play is off. It's not what they see is what they get. And it's a better chance for the defense to create variance they need to get off the field.
The other thing is that I don't want to see the Ravens overreact to what happened here. Davante Adams had a phenomenal game. Mm-hmm. And Gardner Minshew did a good job of putting the ball in spots where Adams had lots of chances to make plays. And there were plenty of opportunities where the Ravens stopped the connection between Adams and Minshew effectively. I thought Brandon Stevens, minus that, what I thought was a particularly bogus penalty, but I thought he played a particularly good game. One, a couple of those catches that Adams had, that could have been prime Darrell Revis, and he's making those catches.
Right.
Right. And
the one leaning out of bounds, there's no defense for that. There's no defense at all. If he'd hit him somehow while the play's being made, he's just taking a risk of a pass interference call that probably is stupid.
There was another inside shoulder throw. Usually you see the back shoulder fade-ish type throw on the sidelines. There was another inside shoulder throw that, again, Stevens was hip for hip with Adams. And like, that's not an advisable throw. And Minshew was just throwing it up to the one guy that he could get. Now, whether you want to question the Ravens need to do a better job of bracketing in those situations to force Minshew to think a little bit more about not making those throws, fine. But I would not overstate this as one of those things. One or two of those catches don't ultimately get completed. And this is a completely different game as well. Right. And you just sometimes have to tip your cap to one of the top three wide receivers in the NFL for having a monster game and ultimately beating you for it. And that's what Davante Adams got paid for. That's why everybody values him that way. I don't think that the worthy touchdown in week one was significantly worse to me than almost any of the plays that the Ravens allotted to Devontae Adams that were successful in this game. And so if you look at it from that perspective, there's something, there are building blocks to build on in that regard. You still see quality from Stevens. Maybe you can sign him an extension after this week.
to get the price break, you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. take the down value on, because I didn't think he played poorly, right? No, I don't think that's that. That was a joke. But I don't think he played poorly in all those regards. And so I think that there were plenty of building blocks to go off of. And we'll talk about a lot of the positives that came out of this game. And if we can move past a couple big plays that didn't happen, really bad net field position in this game, really bad special teams outcomes on the Ravens side of the ball when they should have been forcing the issue in those regards, this game very easily, even with all the shenanigans of the officials, still could have been a lopsided Ravens win. And so I don't want to lose that baby in the bathwater.
Right. All right. Well, let's move on. And I think the one thing that you can talk about that's very positive from this game, and the Ravens dominated it statistically, with the exception of the penalties and some of the special teams play, but they dominated in terms of run defense. They allowed just one rushing first down, actually came on the 1 yard touchdown that was set up after the, might have been after the Bowers catch, or it might have been after
Bowers catch.
Yeah. After the Bowers catch, took him to the one. And they allowed 1.6 yards per play, and they allowed the long run they allowed all day was that 8 yard run that basically helped them set up the field goal at the end of the game. So it was an outstanding day of run defense, and it's good to see that, because you got to be good at something. All right. And it's not, they didn't play a lot of heavy units in this game. They played one jumbo snap at the end of the game, and they played six total base snaps the whole game. So basically they were in big nickel. The bulk of plays, almost 75%, 44 out of 59 of the snaps. They had one other that was a kneel, I'm not counting, but 44 out of 59 snaps, so at 75%, they were in big nickel, and they stopped the run extremely effectively with that. Not every team can do that, by the way. Big nickel is it's an anti-12 defense. The Ravens are using against 11. Devontae Adams on the field, no problem. He's a big slot. We're going to put in Hamilton and have him go against it. They really didn't use Ardarius Washington that much in this game. He was in about seven snaps or something, because they really thought they had what they needed to defend the style of receivers that the Raiders present with a big nickel. And they certainly were effective against the run with it.
Yeah. Well, this defensive line for the Ravens, knock on wood, stays healthy, and you're going to continue to see, in my opinion, frontline production for the Ravens against the pass or against the run. They are incredibly stout and incredibly good. I mean, we saw it in week one when Brent Urban didn't even need to play, and we saw
he needed to be active. I don't know if he needed to play.
I don't think that we saw a huge downplay in performance, though, even without him. Right now, whether or not you would have wanted him in certain situations, et cetera, the Ravens have a really, really good, stout defensive line. And I think that it is showing its dividends. You know, we saw it obviously against the run, but we're also seeing it against the pass. And you see the big game that Ohe and Van Noy had in this game. And some of that is when a quarterback is looking up the field and that pocket is pushing back towards them, even if only slightly, but is not separating, is not opening. If the double teams are happening on the inside instead of on the outside, that's when you see a lot of these opportunities happen. And a guy like Van Noy is going to feast off of those. You know, if you look at his career historically, he's not that edge rusher, right? He needs to be able to be in those isolated one-on-one situations. If the interior of the line is going to continue to provide that for the balance of the season for the Ravens defense, they're only going to continue to get better. And they're going to figure out how to reconfigure what they're doing on the back seven, not even needing to try and be deceptive in some of these instances. And I think that there might have been some of this happening where Kyle Hamilton was blitzing late in the game. He wasn't quite at the line of scrimmage when he was doing it, which I didn't love. Mm-hmm. And he could have just been in coverage somewhere. Right. Like just that extra guy in coverage.
Taking away around. That's all.
Right. Exactly. Or creating less space, whatever that needed to be. I think if we continue to see, and especially if Urban and Washington can continue to be as stout as they were on early downs against the run, and they were in this game, keeping your really good pass rushers rested and then using that combination of mix and match of Pierce and Matabike and Jones to pair up with those edge rushers, and Ajabo, I thought, even played well. and the Ravens are going to just need to rush whatever combination of four of those that they want, or even be deceptive within that. That's going to allow them to, I think, be a lot better against the pass down the stretch too.
Yeah, it was a good solid game for the pass rush. I do want to get into that a little bit later because I think it can be overstated how good they were. And it was a big reversal of Owe in this game in terms of his finishes relative to pressures than he's ever had before. And that was actually a microcosm of the Ravens' problem in general, is they actually gave up a lot of ATS opportunities in this game despite having a great sack total, which is very unusual. It's not a combination that typically goes together, but it's something that actually hurt the Ravens here. They got a turnover in this game. I thought it was a great play by Humphrey. Humphrey did what he's been doing, looking back and finding the football all summer. By the way, that's just been one of the standout things about camp. He's the Ravens' best player for camp. He's making plays every day. He's finding the football. He and Owe both, I think, had to be kind of either told, or they had certain segments, certainly at towards the end of practice, where the defense plays at a lower speed than the offense does, so that they're getting their timing down more for the offense. We see some of that, Humphrey's ability to find the football in the air is at the highest point it's been in his entire career. A guy looks to me like he's playing well enough that he can still play corner right now, but there's no doubt about in my mind that he's going to be able to make a transition to safety pretty effectively.
Which would be a perfect balance for the Ravens' future of this team. I thought he played exceptionally well too. So, and we can talk more about the pass rush and what they were trying to do with that, you know, obviously, but the guys that were getting it done on first down and their continued ability to get it done on first down allows them to do a lot of the other things that they want to do later in the game. And it was really effective.
Yeah. A lot of snap management is going on by the Ravens with having the Harrison Robinson combination in there, for example, on first down in terms of keeping people healthy. That said, they're overworking Owe like nobody's business right now. They are really overworking him in a way. I'm scared what the outcome may be because they're so dependent on him right now. But we'll maybe come back and talk about this a little bit later. In addition to the turnover they had from Humphrey, what I wanted to get into with the turnovers is they really had three good opportunities for turnovers. The Humphrey, little bit of a bouncer, and I never really saw just how bad the bounce was. Humphrey knew he didn't catch the ball, and he let it be known right away because he wasn't jumping up and down and pretending like he did catch it. The strip sack on the very first play, they didn't happen to fall on that ball, and it was just kind of a fortunate thing that Miller was beaten so badly by Owe that his focus immediately was shifted back towards the quarterback, and he got on that ball very quickly.
You gotta make those turnover making plays, you know, and you gotta be able to convert them sometimes in these games to win. And the Ravens did it exceptionally well last year, and so it's gonna be something certainly to. It's some of it is luck, and it's something to keep an eye on. But you want to see the opportunities keep coming, and if they have, you know, I feel like as though the Ravens didn't have a significant imbalance of plays where it felt like they should have turned the ball over, even the Spillane interception, as an example, was pretty fluky off of Bateman's hands, right? And so if you're keeping the plays where you should be turning it over down and creating plays where you should be creating turnovers, that's the way to do it, even if the outcomes look a little like they did today or yesterday, where it's balanced in terms of final numbers.
What's your reaction to the Bateman deflected interception? Because I've got an immediate reaction to it that it really bothers me on a level, but I'd love to hear your reaction to it first.
I didn't love the throw from Lamar into what appeared to be double coverage, but the ball was in a spot that
he
should have caught the ball. Yeah. And so he should have caught the ball. And you want to talk about Bateman and Lamar not having trust. And I mean, that's it, right? Lamar likes to make those kind of throws. That's the throws that he's made to Mark Andrews in his career. He makes those kind of throws to Zay Flowers. Like, I think all this backyard football stuff is overrated. I think Lamar, for his style of whatever he wants to do in terms of throwing the ball, doesn't like what he gets from Bateman at the catch point. And whether you think that's justified or not, they need to figure out what that is. And then this is as simple as Monken getting that down, though, right? Like, he needs to be able to see that too. And they need to stop calling Bateman on routes that are going to look like that. Then, like, give Bateman Aguilar's role and give Aguilar Bateman's role, and you might get what you want out of all that.
That's interesting, because part of the reason why Aguilar is successful in his role, or has been, you know, was last year, let's say, is because Lamar trusts him and he does the thing. And there's other things that Aguilar did as a receiver last year that Bateman would never do, like get in the huddle and say, I'm going to peel off the safety and let Flowers make the catch behind me. That's not Bateman at all.
And Aguilar was a huge culprit in the Ravens game on that fourth down. He blew that play. He ran the wrong route and he didn't read it right. That I still think that play with Zay Flowers' ability to break tackles would have had a shot at being a touchdown.
Against Kansas City, we're talking now, right?
Yeah, the fourth down play where Flowers was hiding, and for my life, I would swear that they did not see him. They did not see him, and I think that was what Aguilar missed. I think that he thought that they were aware of him. He thought the receiver was going to trail him, and he didn't. I don't know. That play I thought that was a boneheaded miss on his part. But there have been too many of those this year for this Ravens team, it feels like, from time to time as well, where, you know, especially much more on the offensive side than the defensive side. And I know we're not here to talk about some of that kind of stuff, but they just feel disjointed and out of sync in every possible way. And despite all of that, actually have decent overall net offensive numbers. They're not that far from let's not be, I would caution everybody that's listening to this, don't be too worried about it. I think that, and it might take 6 weeks to clean it up, and that might be too late because of how tough the schedule is early for this Ravens team, but they're going to get it cleaned up, and they're going to be good when they do.
You know, this should almost be at the beginning or the end of the episode, you know, just to get the listeners involved. But I'm with you. I mean, I think, you know, there's a couple of things about this Ravens team that are different from every other Ravens team that's ever found themselves in a similar position. And if you look at the 2005 Ravens or the 2007 Ravens or the 2022 Ravens or the 21 Ravens or the 21 Ravens, took a long time for that to develop. It really was until Lamar got hurt that they were just smoke and mirrors, 69 Mets, you know, sleepwalking their way through this incredible run of success until all of a sudden Lamar got hurt and they couldn't do it anymore. This team is completely healthy. They have one of the best players in the NFL leading the offense, whether you think he's played great so far or not. And I think he's played well so far at the very top. But no, he really hasn't been in terms of his passing relative to his opportunity set, maybe, but he's been okay. And he certainly run the ball very effectively, run them out of a ton of pressures so far this year. And just the fact that they're healthy right now, and you can see the solution for this. In the past years, I remember writing an article in 2007, and the Ravens had a street of dying men scene in the secondary that year. You don't know that. That's from some of these things are too old as references, but it's from their movie Gone with the Wind. And there's this scene where basically Scarlett O'Hara is walking through the middle of, if I have to explain this, it's not going to be that funny. Walking through the streets of Atlanta, I believe, you're looking for someone, and she's talking to someone who's lying in the middle of the street and is obviously getting some sort of care. And then they pull out and you see there's just everybody is getting care on this street. Anyway, that's what basically the Ravens secondary looked like in 2007. Everybody was down, you know, basically I remember writing an article about the exponential defensive improvement theory, that getting back either Terrell Suggs or some other specific player that was in the secondary was going to exponentially improve how the Ravens did. It's if you believe in that, was the nature of that article here. The Ravens don't have that sort of problem right now. The problem they have is they're not really firing on all cylinders right now when they're going to face a tough run of the things. And they have an offensive line that they can't trust. But other than that, there's no other element of this defense that I...
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium, 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, But as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code Ravens. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code Ravens when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Think you just can't trust. The safeties, they might not be good enough. The inside linebackers, they might not have the coverage skills to mesh in with the safeties, but I don't really see that. I don't see this team as having the same set of insurmountable obstacles that the 2015 team had, the 2005 team, the 2017, all those other teams where the Ravens have played very poorly for a time and it's looked helpless.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's there. It's close. Maybe they don't ever put it together. Maybe they don't put it together, but it hasn't. You know, we've certainly seen much worse situations on much worse Ravens teams and had validity to those concerns. And so, given that, I'm willing to wait and see.
All right, let's wait and see. Let's do that. We'll talk about packages here for a few minutes, talk about them less. Don't need a lot of time. And so I already mentioned that big nickel is what they played most of the time, 44 snaps of that. Only six of the standard nickel, there was one penalty in there. That's why I said seven snaps earlier for Ardarius Washington, who was out. One jumbo, six base packages, two of the uncovered nickel. What I like about the uncovered nickel is it gives them a different look to present. And this is something that Orr probably would like to have in his thing. Just have a different look you present to the opponents. Maybe you present them with a five-man front, meaning a jumbo nickel, where you have only one inside linebacker on the field. You can do that occasionally. It's just a different look. There's nothing at this point. There's nothing so damn special about Simpson that you can't take him out of the field, off the field. I don't like taking him off and putting Willie Carrison in this spot off ball, but I do like. I don't have a problem if you want to put in Brent Urban and get a third offense, a third defensive lineman in there to improve your run defense that way. So it just, you know, it was something during the Martindale era and even into the McDonald era, less so, that they had as a different look. And I think, you know, those, when you have those, when you have rotational looks, when you're forcing the cornerback to consider, well, who do they have at corner right now? You know, who am I trying to throw at right now? And even if he has to go through that thought process, it's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is also Wiggins coming back, right? Mm-hmm. The Ravens did seem like they shied away a little bit from Armour Davis's usage prior to. I was surprised at how much use he got in the Kansas City game anyway, especially with Wiggins playing in that game and then vanished. So maybe that's rooted in some kind of health injury or something that we don't know about there, or he had a really bad week of practice, or who knows, right? But hopefully you start to see, you know, once these packages start to mix and match, the ability then to say, and I can see this happening, the Ravens saying, we need to get some kind of rhythm around who is playing in some of these situations. Those guys need to be able to communicate the multifaceted nature of what we're going to showcase with those guys in those packages. We can't do all of this at once. And if we try and do too much right out of the gate, it's going to be too much. And then you're going to get blown coverages, right? Like yeah. That is all. And this could have been a reaction to what happened on the Worthy touchdown. And if it was, I'm okay with it, right? Which is that we can't throw the kitchen sink every week right now yet. Right. We need to get everybody onto the same page. We need to make sure that we're all in the same places of those. We need to reduce the number of calls we're learning every week. But by the time we get if we're learning four crazy coverages every week that are unique, by the time we get to week nine, now we've got 36. Yeah, we might only have 12 on week four, but we're going to have to live with that. But we're not going to have blown coverages as a result of that. Right. And we didn't see blown coverage. You know, some big plays from Adams. Again, we talked about this already. Big plays from Adams while he was covered, a couple losses of Bowers kind of like behind the linebackers, but beyond, I wouldn't consider those busted coverages. Right. And we didn't see busted coverages in this game. And to me, you know, if I'm choosing a progression, I could see how that was a point of emphasis for the Ravens at practice.
We didn't see people get behind the secondary, but we did see Adams way too open on his drop late in the game. You know, I mean, you've gotten boned by Adams for 100 yards plus at that point. And then all of a sudden he's free in the middle of the secondary, looking like that was probably going to be a touchdown on that play. And he drops the ball very fortunately, but that was ugly. And then I think that was on their scoring, their touchdown tying drive.
Mm-hmm. It ended up being not relevant. But though the Stevens play, where Stevens, I thought, had good coverage, almost ended up being was a drop by Adams too, because Stevens had good coverage, but Adams could have caught that ball and just didn't. And I think that's some of what you just get with Davante Adams. He's, mm-hmm. If you give him enough opportunity, he's going to burn you, and that's just what's going to happen.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, going back to Wiggins and Armour Davis, it was a little surprising to me that they didn't try more Armour Davis, but also that it might have been a function that Washington played well in the first game. So they wanted to use him at slot on the plays where they weren't going big nickel. They went big nickel primarily, which restricts total cornerback snaps significantly. And so you didn't have an option for Humphrey to move to the slot anyway. And then they stayed with Humphrey and Stevens for every snap the whole game, except for one when Stevens was hurt for a play and Armour Davis came in to replace him. But I think things would have worked out differently. I think they would have used Humphrey in the slot again for more plays and probably used Washington a little bit less. So I think Wiggins is the guy they really want to see. And I think Wiggins is the guy who could have really helped them in terms of makeup speed, island usage, whatever you want to call it, in a game like this where they had some fast receivers they had to cover, even though they're not named Davante Adams, Tucker, people like that they could have. Myers. Yeah.
I totally agree with you. And maybe the Ravens prepped like they thought Wiggins was going to have a chance to play and he didn't. You know, we don't know about what those things are, what those packages look like. And again, this is where a guy like McDonald looks way better in year two of his coaching career, right? As a defensive coordinator for the Ravens. I mean, we were talking about the exact, it's funny. We had Rex Ryan basically chirping the exact same BS about, he's not chirping as much about Orr because he probably knows him, but mm-hmm. chirping about how McDonald needed to go after week two against the Dolphins because of that collapse. And that was completely unacceptable. And by the end of last year, you have a guy that Ravens fans say it was impossible. How could you let him get away and not become the head coach? He's such a defensive genius, right? So there is 17 plus 15, 32 game plus playoffs, right? 32 games worth of time for Orr to get to the same point that McDonald is regarded as right now in everybody's minds. And let's not go crazy, assuming that the game plan might not have been, for whatever reason that we don't know, not the one that they ended up implementing on game day. And that's a lot harder when you have less tricks in your bag.
Yeah. It's a great point. Very valid. I did want to also point out variation in role was greatly reduced to this. And we did talk a little bit about it, but the big thing was we did not see Malik Harrison off ball. So that's Orr realizing, yeah, that ain't working. So I'm at least happy to see that. And they've got him back in the role where his body is built for it. He was effective at it last year. When you consider him as a Sam linebacker, he's certainly not a terrible cover guy. When he's an inside linebacker and he has more front to back responsibility, more responsibility for a deeper drop, that's when he's really outmatched. He also, for the second straight week, he had a really bad and costly missed tackle on the outside. And that's something as a linebacker, just even with his background, he's got to be better at making those decisions. That means approaching the guy differently. It means, trying to maintain leverage properly relative to that guy. It's not easy. Tackling the open field is a hard thing. Offensive players are trying to make you miss, and they're damn good at it, generally speaking, at this level. But it still was a very bad play for the second straight week. I think both of them were on the left side there, pretty much at the same spot on the field.
I'm not a Malik Harrison lover, and I don't think that the Ravens, you want to talk about a guy that I would take off the field and give Sam Cook a spot just to hold the ball. For me, it's Malik Harrison. I think Tavius Robinson gives you the same physicality on rundowns as the Sam linebacker. He gives you the same equivalent pass defense in terms of what you need. Maybe you don't want to let Harrison off the roster because you're a little worried about depth long term, but Harrison had no place on the field as inside linebacker over Trenton Simpson in week one. And in my opinion, he is a like a true backup in the sense of, I mean, I would rather the Ravens go out and get Christian Welch and let him play in that spot.
If it came to it, okay, if they lost Roquan and the nuclear option here, Malik would only be the fill-in for the rest of that game at the Mike linebacker. But they don't have anybody else who really fits that role. Not Ross, not Simpson on even on a limited basis, not I don't think so anyway, and not who's the other linebacker they have that I'm forgetting right now? Harrison is the only guy anyway that they have on the team who would make any sense. I think they'd go to the street at that point because I think the body type needed for the Mike linebacker position specifically on a two down basis is so common that you don't have to worry about not being able to find it. You don't even really have to be worried about having it on your practice squad. He's not going to be your signal caller. He's just going to be somebody who really knows how to play run defense and is a good thumper. And then on third down, you're going to move Simpson over to that side, which is going to be a bigger job in terms of prepping him for that role. And you're going to bring in a dime back probably to play next to him. I don't think you have to worry about Malik Harrison getting you through more than the end of a game, but Malik Harrison has tremendous value. He's a five unit special teams player. I mean, he's been a decent Sam linebacker. He's a good early down snap reliever. Yeah, you get Tavius Robinson, but who are you going to put in with Tavius? Well, when Adisa Isaac is healthy, maybe you got somebody else who you can put in the game and see there. I think I want an experienced guy who knows how to play the run on first down out there. And I think you get that from Harrison. So I think the mismatch is in having him play off ball, which really is a mismatch of having him play both off ball and on ball, given it's really two different body types.
I'll put it this way. If the Ravens play Kansas City again and Malik Harrison plays a single snap, Kansas City, no, hear me out. Okay. Kansas City will ISO him and they'll beat him and they'll do it every single time he's on the field. He should not, and teams that will hunt him. And Blake Harrison lost those matches 5 years ago when Kansas City hunted him in those games. They hunt him every time the Ravens play him.
And they've hunted Patrick Queen whenever they've had him. It's true.
They know how to do that. And the play that happened this week with the Raiders was reminiscent to me of that. Now, I don't know that the Raiders were as sophisticated on offense as going at Harrison in that same way, but if I'm an offensive coordinator and I see Malik Harrison on the field, I've got an audible package for every single snap that isolates him and goes after him because he cannot play pass defense. He can't.
He's definitely not the same player in terms of body shape that he was. You're saying
it's even then, 5 years Kansas City hunted.
Well, I mean, they destroyed Patrick Queen in the 2020 game. They were both rookies. Harrison wasn't really getting playing time at that point, but they destroyed Patrick Queen.
What's the Monday night? It was either a Thursday night or a Monday night.
That's
game.
The one. The 2020.
Game. No, they went after Harrison like six times in that game. There were at least four Kelsey catches.
Okay.
One-on-one.
I will have the answer for you before part two of the show. Okay, let me just promise you that, and we'll do this. But in the specific game I'm talking about from 2020, there were five separate occurrences during the game where there was post play emotion shown to basically slap Patrick Queen back and forth across the face several times to get him to do the right coverage. So that game pissed me off like nobody else's business in terms of that. All right.
Anyway, Malik Harrison is one of those guys that I agree with you. There's more value than I'm giving him credit on. But I think he's again, and this is just the way the NFL operates. If you have guys that can be targeted like that, and Daniel Falele falls into this group right now, right? Like if you have guys that can be targeted like that, they're going to create significant negative plays on either side of the ball for a player. They are guys that you should really think significantly about putting onto the field. I hope John Harbaugh and the Ravens offense is listening.
Now, Daniel didn't have a good game this year. We just finished scoring it and I haven't tabulated it yet. So I don't really want to talk about it yet.
Okay.
But it was a tough game for Daniel. All right. I want to talk about the pass rush a little bit before we wrap up part one of the show. But I briefly entered with this point. So I want to get people thinking about this before we go. The Ravens got good pressure. They got good pressure. When they got good pressure, they finished. Let's put it that way. On Minshew, they got a bunch of good quarterback hits. They got nine times they knocked him down, but they only got 15 total pressures in the game. So they only had six times where they had somebody in the cone or were getting close and they didn't get there. Normally everybody's problem is the Ravens just aren't finishers. They don't close out sacks. They miss too many sacks. First of all, the pressures are tremendously valuable. So you treat them with the respect they're due. And then there's been players specifically like Owe, who have not finished at the rate that people think is appropriate and at the rate that Owe would want appropriate. And in this game, he had 2.5 sacks, but that was the entirety of his pressure events for the game. And I'm not saying that's bad, but that's all he had for the whole game. You know, Van Noy had 2 sacks, but he also had a bunch of other pressures. Matabike had a bunch of pressures and no sacks. There were some frustrations in this. Here's the basic problem is, they still had 35% ATS in this game. Minshew had 35% ATS. There's 15 plays where he was able to just sit back there in the pocket. And they averaged 9.3 yards per play on those. If you really look at where they succeeded in this game, it's those plays. Those are the ones that they threw down the field. They did have one play to Bowers that went for a good play. I think it was the one that got him down to the 1 yard line that there was a pressure involved. But basically, it's the ATS throws that boned the Ravens.
I mean, and that's going to be, I think that you'll typically see that kind of outcome in any game. Sure. The ATS throws are the ones that are going to beat you, and you've got to figure out that's the front half to the back half of what the Ravens are trying to do, right? And you're seeing very much what was the year with Jernigan and Suggs and Doomerville, where they were just like exceptional with in 2014, they were just exceptional with 4 rushers and they were impossible to stop. And it didn't really make a difference. Right. That is not the front that the Ravens have here. Right. And so you've got to be able to mix and match what you're doing and kind of get the left hand and the right hand in sync in terms of what those things are doing. And once they get there, it felt like there weren't a lot of coverage snaps in this game. And it felt like if looking back at last season, and I'm making this up, so this is all feel.
Okay, sure.
There's nothing statistical about this, but it felt like about a third of the Ravens sacks were coverage sacks.
Right? Okay, I hear you.
That what was happening in the secondary allowed guys to get home that might not have gotten home otherwise, right? Those kind of sacks have not yet, despite the high production that happened from a sack output in this game, I don't feel like it's been a third so far this year in terms of, and let's call it pressure. Pressures is probably a better measure. I'd say a third of pressures last year were generated by what was happening in the secondary, right? Or maybe even more than a third, probably. I'd say this year we're not really seeing that so far. That there haven't been instances where a quarterback, and part of this is Mahomes is half the sample, right? Mm-hmm. A quarterback is looking at what they think that they're looking at, and it's ultimately not that, and they pull the ball down, and then all of a sudden things change, right? That hasn't been what we've seen so far yet, and that was a big staple of what we got in McDonald defenses.
Yeah, it's definitely true, and I think your original estimate, I think I'd go along with that. I wouldn't, I might set the over-under at 25% to 33% in terms of the percentage of the pressures that were somehow based on what they were doing in the secondary. And that's a tough order. That's a really tough order to fill for Orr in terms of scheming up his coverage differently to improve the number of pressures they get from whatever the hell it is right now, which doesn't seem like very much. Yeah. And you're right. Mahomes being half the sample is ruining this. I saw Jonas Schaefer put out something today, basically saying that this ain't the same Ravens secondary and they're giving up 9 yards a throw and this. And I'm, wait a minute. That, first of all, I didn't agree with the yardage. And I go, oh, I see what he did. He didn't include sacks in there as net yardage. And then you come down with a much lower number. You're about 7 yards per throw. And that's not what the Ravens want. It's not as good as last year, but also it's half Mahomes. it's like, what do you want to do about
that? And the worthy throw that was the busted coverage. I mean, what was the Ravens yards per play allowed through week 2 last in 2 seasons ago, right? And so again, and we keep throwing it back to this. I'll let this horse die. Yes. But what were the Ravens yards per plays during those 2 weeks, and then what were they over the next 32 games, right? So you know, sure, a 2-game sample size is just, you know, it's hard stop, not enough to measure some of this kind of stuff. Minshew should have probably had, accounting for penalties, 6 to 7 less plays taken overall, right? 6 to 7 less opportunities to throw jump balls to Davante Adams is a difference maker. And maybe the Ravens needed to approach the game a little bit differently in that regard, right? That if we're playing against somebody, and maybe they need to think about this for their approach against the Cowboys next week, right? If CeeDee Lamb is going to be the guy, and they're going to be able to shut the run down otherwise, and Prescott is just going to look to force feed it to CeeDee Lamb, if you're going to ISO him in one-on-one and not bracket and not create opportunities where you're taking away those looks, maybe you need to adjust to that.
Yeah, I think they need to come up with something different in the secondary. Harbaugh's coached a secondary for 1 year. I think he could easily spend this week in a point of emphasis trying to figure out, you know, how do we restructure what we're doing defensively to not get beat the way we did. And to have an answer, just to have another answer, you know, to be able to show some different look, to be able to use some different scheme that would make things more difficult. And Prescott's certainly a fully error-prone quarterback. He is a guy who can make mistakes. He can help you win the game if you just let him. Nah, you know, obviously anything where you bracket CD Lamb is probably going to be a positive for that. I want to go through quickly some numbers here. ATS BOQ pressure. So they had 15 ATS plays, 139 yards, 9.3 yards per play. Did have the turnover, by the way, on an ATS throw. He's just sitting back in the pocket and they threw the turnover to Humphrey way short. Ball out quick was 13 plays, 4.7 yards per play. It's a little bit better than expected for the Ravens defense. It should be around 5.5 to 6 yards on those. And then for pressure, they had 15 plays, 35%. And that's the good ratio to look at, is what's their pressure to ATS rate for the defense. When it's 1-to-1, that's not good. You want to see a ratio of something like 3-to-2, 7-to-4, something like that. And that relationship is a good ratio. 1-to-1 is not good. And those 15 plays went for 34 yards, which was below expectation, largely because they had 5 sacks at 2.3 yards per play. But overall, Minshew outperformed his opportunity set by about 10 yards in this game. And that's without the consideration for penalties, which would obviously make that a lot worse if you toss those in there.
And you take, again, going back to Adams just having a phenomenal game, you take a couple of those catches away and he's going to underperform by that margin by a lot. And this game just swings completely differently.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it wasn't something about Minshew's performance that was so extraordinary that you say, boy, we're never going to beat that, like you would with Mahomes and his ability to just take advantage of you every time you present him with anything. Minshew didn't have that kind of game. 5.4 yards per attempt, you know, net yards per attempt. That's not particularly good. And it's just what is what it is. All right, let's talk numbers for a second. This is kind of an interesting thing, and I wonder where the Ravens are going to go with this. They rushed three times, 4.3 yards per play, rushed 29 times this game. They rushed four for 142 yards, 4.9 yards per play on average. That included 5 sacks. That's and also the turnover. That is the grand slam of what you want. Is to have a dominant four-man rush. If you get that, there's almost no weapon in football that defensively will guarantee you success. And the reason is, not only is the 4.9 yards per play good, although you'd say, oh, if we allowed 4.9 yards per run, we'd just move right up the field. Well, you would, but you have to take a tremendous amount of variance with pass plays to do that. And that has included 5 sacks and a turnover that totally throw off your plans on any one of those drives where those occur. So, that's absolutely fantastic four-man production in terms of the pass rush. That's not an issue at all. Then they rushed five and they give up 8.7 yards per play. Again, very small sample size, nine snaps. And when they rushed six, it was 2 plays for 1 yard. So if I throw those two together, it's 11 plays for 79. They're at 7.2 yards per play. I there's no conclusion I would particularly draw from that other than it's a small sample size. And they were a little more effective when the Ravens rushed more. But maybe the thing for Orr to ask himself and to really look at when they're looking at the film, which they've already done, obviously, is to say, how can we fill in behind the player we blitz? And 100% of the time, by the way, that was either Simpson or Hamilton. How can we fill in behind the player we blitz to try and reduce the effectiveness when we do try and rush five or six?
Well, this is one of those instances where you miss the ability to push Humphrey inside, where you miss Arthur Millette, you miss the ability to change who some of those guys are. And the Ravens have never really utilized Williams or Geno Stone in that role, but you want to, it was pretty obvious when, at least to me, when the Ravens were going to rush Kyle Hamilton. And I don't think he got particularly close to getting home on, I think I saw 3 rushes from nickel from him. And again, I don't think he got particularly close to home in my recollection.
One pressure. Yep.
And so that's not going to cut it. And so whether that's, I thought Hamilton was way too far off the line of scrimmage in every single one of those instances. He had an extra 3 yards to go. When we saw him really effective, he was at the line of scrimmage, and they were trying to decide whether he was going to press a guy and cover him, run with him hip for hip, or if he was going to rush. In this instance, it felt like he was like pushed back from the line of scrimmage a little bit more. I'd like to see him closer to the line of scrimmage if you're going to want to keep him in some of those roles. And I agree with you, though. Their four-man rush looks really strong right now. And you, whether that's a combination of wanting to use Madubuike, Pierce, and Travis Jones together with Owe or whoever else needs to be out there, the Ravens have some flexibility of who those four guys can be. Ajabo has looked really solid, a really natural pass rusher. You're seeing it this year, finally. Knock on wood that he can stay healthy kind of in that situation. So it's certainly the one position where a big injury or the one area where one big injury feels like it could really hurt the Ravens in terms of pass rush. But, and you mentioned that earlier with Owe, I'd love to see the Ravens start to continue to get simpler and simpler in terms of the number of guys they feel like they rush and be more and more complex behind what they're doing behind them. I still, as I've already said on this podcast, I think that's coming. And it stinks that we don't have it already. but some of that is Wiggins getting hurt during the preseason and not being able to get reps in there. It's not knowing exactly who is going to be in which positions, where you like them with. Jackson coming in late as well. So some of those adjustments can ideally come fast and furious. And as you have good things to build on, better things will follow. Right now, we don't have great things to build on.
I think that is the way. What you've just said about, you know, you build your defense, in this case, front back to front. You have a front you really like. You already think it's fairly flexible in terms of how you can rush the passer. You can stunt. You don't have to play games to win. You can rely on one-on-ones. You actually have some ability to match up differently just along the four-man front to set up differently. And then beyond that, you can compound the offense's problems by rushing a fifth guy in theory. But it is the coverage that they've need to get figured out behind that. That's the thing that is going to make the pass rush more effective. And of course the pass rush getting home should make the coverage more effective. And they're hand in hand, like pitching and fielding. You know, good pitching makes fielding good. Good fielding makes pitching good. And you can't ever break down all the links between the two and really feel like you've separated it into these are the effects of either of these things. All right, let me jump on to talk about deceptive elements real quickly. 10 off-ball blitzes, all of them were singles. The 0.23 per play is not particularly high. 6.4 yards per play on those plays is not a result that's such an outlier that you say anything. Here's the problem. They blitzed 10 times from off-ball, and six of those ended up being ATS opportunities anyway. Now, sometimes the blitz comes and it's still just a four-man rush. You're looking at it, it's an outside linebacker who's dropped. Typically, they didn't drop any of the interior guys in this game, but it typically it'll be an outside linebacker who drops, and then that creates an opportunity to change the zone blitz, but not that you would expect a higher number of pressures would occur from that. And have six of those 10 be stopped up for ATS plays is just, that's really bad because you've given up a coverage asset most of the time on those plays. It might just be Simpson. Was it, a modest coverage asset, but it might be Hamilton, and that's a major coverage asset.
Yeah, and I think Simpson is, you got to get him the reps. He's better than Queen is in terms of what, or Queen was in terms of what you were getting in that regard, and you got to let him get some of those reps in game two. And some of this also could be that Roquan and Queen have played a season and a half together and we're better in sync and we're passing off better, etc. There's a lot of, I don't know the best way to describe this, but when you had two linebackers in hook zones sitting underneath, and it feels like this used to happen 3 or 4 years ago to the Ravens a lot, the teams would just attack right in the middle of that. Mm-hmm. And when Roquan got here, that seemed to stop. And I don't know what the adjustment is there as a team that allowed them to do that. If that's how you match up, if that's how you pass off, is that how you're communicating in terms of the coverage, all of that. But we've seen a lot of it this year.
Yeah, Roquan has been his entire career astounding at being able to anticipate how the routes are going to develop behind him. And one thing you can see is with really good linebackers who are in coverage, they'll look to the other side of the field to look for that crossing route before the play starts, and even to understand when it's going to go behind them. I mean, you say, okay, it's going to go behind them. I need to have a 3 or 4 yard drop. Some of them will just look surreptitiously, but if you look at the all 22, you'll see their helmet will actually turn to see that, generally speaking. And they'll anticipate the need to drop as well as the need to cover the guy who's on their side of the field in whatever zone. They may have responsibility for that is most proximal. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Let's move on. They had four stunts, all singles, 24 yards, 6.0 yards per play. Nothing I would say about this other than what I think this means. When you only stunt four times in a ball game and you only blitz 10 times, so they had 33 plays where the players on field could have called stunts themselves, could have said, yeah, I want to twist on this play. Hey, Matabike can, you know, nudge at Travis Jones and say, hey, let me go, let me be the over on this one. And I'm going to try and hit that B gap on the other side. If you can set me up here. If all of that, you know, would show up in more stunts, and the Ravens used to, you know, do a ton of those when Calais Campbell was here. And before that, in the early years of the Ravens, they did an unbelievable amount of stunting with Marvin Lewis. It seems to me that Orr has probably kiboshed stunting unless he calls it. And that bothers me. So I'm not bothered by the results. I'm not, there's nothing about the, you know, the four plays and hey, they stunted it wasn't particularly good or particularly bad in this game. The thing that bothers me is that there's not more stunts because the players on the field wanted to call them.
Yeah. That's one of those ones that we don't know yet. Right. And what the derivation is and where that's coming from and, you know, where or why the success is and isn't happening. And less stunting has probably something to do with the improvement in the run game. And so how much of a trade-off do you want with some of those things as well? Certainly something to keep an eye on. I want players on the field to be able to make adjustments in every instance than not. And any coach that is taking that away, a coach taking that away that was a player that was part of teams that audibled heavily makes me think it won't last for very long if it is actually what's happening.
Yeah, it is actually a little bit scary to think that that might be occurring. And if you ever talk to a coach or defense coordinator at the podium, they'll always talk about empowering their players and blah, 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 blah. You can't always trust it. You have to actually see what happens because sometimes it's, you know, do as I say, not as I do kind of thing.
Especially with coaches.
Yeah, it certainly can be that way. Okay, simulated pressures. They only had three of those where they dropped two players, 8.0 yards per play. Again, not enough to worry about that, but it's not a lot of simulated pressures in a game. I do think in terms of simulated pressures, I don't think they're getting a lot of value out of dropping Roquan from the line of scrimmage, which is who it often is, or Simpson, or even Hamilton sometimes. Hamilton is probably going to be the most adept at backing himself off into a valuable coverage position from the line of scrimmage. Roquan, I think you got to be more careful with it with him. I know that he likes to line up in the A gap sometimes, and you know it shows something different to the opponent, but I think it actually may be hurting the Ravens in some ways.
Yeah, I don't know that I saw enough of any of that to have a feel for it, but you know, we already see the Ravens make significant adjustments from week one to week two, Simpson being a good example of that, Armour Davis seeing the field less. So I, you know, again, this progression, the progression almost matters more than the outcome of what happened in the game prior to this moving forward. And as opposed to, I think historically, you know, you look at what Patrick Queen gave you and you say, well, we know what we're like at this point in Patrick Queen's career, we know what we're getting from him and we know what that looks like, right? There's plenty of room here to say, we don't know what the rest of this is going to look like. There's still room for opportunity.
Right. All right. Outstanding talking with you as always, Jordan. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah. You guys can find me on Twitter at Ravens Sit Room X, whatever the heck you call it these days. Love to chat Ravens football there. Talk a little bit about what's happening in the games.
All right. Other folks out there, if you'd like to go on a film study short, hit me up. If you'd like to help out the show, write a 50-year word review on any of the podcast platforms. Always appreciate that. And always a like and subscribe if you're listening to this on YouTube. Always nice to increase the subscriber base a little bit there. We honestly are not very much into YouTube, to be honest, but having a little bit better number there probably will show up in the algorithm and help people find the show who've never seen it before. Jordan, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.